listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Hello and welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. Thanks for making the Crosscheck NHL Show your first listen every Tuesday and Friday. We're free and available on all platforms, now including YouTube. My name is Mary Clark, staff writer for The Win, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mary C. Clark. I'm here with Andrew Berkshire, NHL analyst for the Montreal Gazette and host of Game Over Montreal on the SDPN. You can follow on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire. On this Friday edition of the Crosscheck, we'll check in on the start of the second round of the playoffs. The Battle of Alberta began with an instant classic of a game that had nearly everything you could want as a hockey fan. We'll also touch on the Panthers, who could very well be broken after another rough start to their series. All that and more. Plus, we'll touch on the Coyotes arena situation as it continues to embarrass the NHL. So, Andrew, before we start today's show, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I had to do a Costco run this morning, so I'm already tired, you know, wading through the sea of humanity. But the mask mandate has been dropped in Quebec finally, and as much as I think it's important to continue to practice diligence during the pandemic because it's not over, man, it just feels a lot more normal right now. It's kind of nice to see people's faces.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I still wear a mask when I go into places, but it's not like I'm going a whole ton of places anyway. But you know, I still do. But yes, it is. It you know, spring is here, obviously. Summer is around the corner soon. You know, getting outside is nice. And we were talking before the podcast that today is, it's a bit of a dreary day, which is a shame because the last couple of days here were really nice. So I've been able to, like, before I start work, I've been able to, like, go outside and, you know, sit outside and read and soak in the sun. So it's nice to, you know, be out, see other people, just, you know, try and continue our lives as normal, because sure, we're still in a pandemic, but it's been a long couple of years, Andrew. I think we can both attest to the fact that it's been long. But the good news is playoff hockey continues. Playoff hockey is incredible. It's been a really great playoffs this year, and I think it's best to start with the game that we just watched last night. But obviously, by the time you guys are hearing this, it'll be Friday, so a couple more games will have been played. But we are, of course, talking about the Battle of Alberta between the Edmonton Oilers and Calgary Flames. Was an instant classic of a game. The Flames won 9-6 in game one. If you had gone to sleep, you know, after the overtime game between, what was it? The Hurricanes and Rangers that had gone to overtime, and like the Hurricanes scored in overtime to win, and then immediately the Flames had took a 2-0 lead on the Oilers. I don't know how you could have gone to bed because you missed out on an incredible game. The best one we've seen in these playoffs, just the height of drama and just, oh, it was so good. It was so good. And we're going to talk about that because what a game. Like I said, the Flames scored 2 goals, I think, in like the opening minute. It was wild. Mike Smith was chased after allowing 3 goals on 10 shots in the first 6 minutes of the game. And then I think, what did you say, Andrew, on Twitter, that like Mike Smith allowed the fewest amount of goals in that game, but had the worst save percentage and only played 6 minutes, something to that effect?
Yeah. Of the goalies who played in that game, he allowed the fewest goals. So he allowed 3 and both the other goalies allowed 6.
Yeah, that, oh man, I had originally written, because I was, you know, working on the podcast doc that we do, you know, taking notes and stuff like that, you know, making sure that the podcast has some sort of order to it. I originally wrote if Mike Smith was turning back into a pumpkin. Then I had to change it after, because that wasn't the story anymore. Sure, Mike Smith getting lit up, you know, early on and having to leave after. Man, that first goal was so bad. I mean, all the goals were bad, but that first goal was just an absolute softy. It looked to have like handcuffed him. Oh man, it was so bad. And I was fully prepared to make this whole segment really about Mike Smith, but no. Then just the whole game exploded. The Flames went up 5-1, but then blew the lead. They gave up, they gave up the lead, but they, like, the Oilers were able to tie it 6-6 by the beginning of the third period, basically.
Yep.
And then, of course, the Flames went back to, you know, scoring 3 straight goals and then winning the game. But my God, Andrew, that was a game. That was the best game, I think, the best playoff game I think I've seen in a while. I'm trying to remember, like, the last I think maybe the last time, or one of the last times, was the 5 overtime game with Tampa Bay, just for the sheer like spectacle in terms of like, is this really happening? Because that was more of like, are we really this deep into overtime? And this was, oh my God, I can't believe the Flames coughed up the lead. But, you know, you were obviously watching the game, Andrew. So how'd you see it unfold from your perspective?
It was a fantastic game. There was not much goaltending to speak of. It looked like the Battle of Alberta that hadn't happened in 31 years in the playoffs was transported right back into the 1980s. Like, mm-hmm. You know, Jacob Markstrom, great night, honestly, for him to have his worst night in maybe 2 years. Mm-hmm. It was a real rough one. It just so happened that his team scored 9 to bail him out. Smith was terrible. I thought Koskinen was actually okay. The Flames just absolutely dominated that game from puck drop. At midway through the second period, I believe, at one point, the shots were like 32-8 for Calgary.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and they let off the gas pedal a little bit, and then Edmonton came roaring back. And obviously, when Markstrom wasn't saving them, I think they scored their first 4 goals in like 12 shots or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that means, I think at that point it was 6-2. So they scored 2 more on the next couple of shots there. But yeah, it was a rough second period for Markstrom, that's for sure. He was better in the third period, but you know, given to the Oilers, they never gave up. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, how deflating is it to come back from a 5-1 or 6-2 deficit? Mm-hmm. And immediately give up a goal. Like, it was not long after at all. And that's just unacceptable for the Edmonton Oilers. I know it wasn't their starting goaltender by any means, but Kyler Yamamoto scores just under 90 seconds into the third period. And then Rasmus Anderson scores under three minutes in. So it's 90 seconds and 90 seconds, basically. That's all you have the lead or the game tied for. And you know, Calgary scored 26 seconds into the first, 45 seconds into the second, and 2 minutes 57 seconds into the third. Also, they scored 2 goals in the first period when the ice was still shiny, right from the Zamboni.
Yeah.
Andrew Mangiapane scored 51 seconds in. You can't win games when you're not ready to start periods, and the Oilers weren't ready. And I think the result looks kinder to the Oilers than the game actually was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think I tweeted a picture last night of the Oilers having 8 shots. Like, it was remarkable at how lopsided it was. Jake Oettinger, this Oilers goaltending is not. It feels like the Flames are finally, like, taking out their frustrations after being shut down by Oettinger. Not that it felt like a direct response. It just kind of felt like they realized, oh, this is different. Jake Oettinger isn't on the other side. We could actually score goals and, you know, play the game that they wanted to play. And it showed, because you're right. They took advantage of, you know, the game beginning and then, you know, every period like since. Like, it was just this is the Flames team I think we wanted to see, you know, from the very beginning of the playoffs. It felt like their offense was dampened a little bit. And that was probably because in terms like Jake Oettinger, absolutely an incredible brick wall, but also the Stars, like, style of play. I think you said when we previewed this series that, you know, you thought the Oilers, like, looser style of play would, you know, result in very likely more goals for the Flames and just a more open style of game in general, because that first series with the Flames and Stars was probably the most boring one of the opening round, if I had to guess. There were very few goals scored, and it took the Flames, like, I don't know, I swear I saw a stat that it took them like 5 games to score 9 goals or whatever. In their opening series, and it took them 1 game to do that here. Obviously, this is a bit of an anomaly because, you know, this doesn't happen often. It gives me very like Flyers Penguins vibes, and what was it, 2012, when that series, when no goalie could stop anything, Marc-Andre Fleury was, you know, at his peak.
An absolute classic of the series, of the playoffs too. Like, that series was incredible. It was just like, you never knew what was going to happen, who was going to come out on top, because it was so all over the place. Nobody could stop a puck. I believe the Flyers won that series, right?
Yeah,
that
they
was
did.
The Crosby passing the baton to Giroux series.
Yes. It was. Whatever. We don't have to get back into that part of it, but yes.
Who was it who said that?
Was that Peter Laviolette.
Peter Laviolette, yeah. I mean, I'm all for coaches boosting up their own players and talking about how good they are, but the greatest player in the world debate is always ridiculous. Like, I can't see Daryl Sutter at the end of this, when Calgary will most likely win, saying Johnny Gaudreau is the best player in the world. You know, I feel like maybe coaches have learned from that moment because it was so ridiculous. No disrespect to Claude Giroux, who's a fantastic player, and we've talked a lot about this season, but yeah, not quite Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, that quote game, doesn't though, it doesn't look good in hindsight at all. It didn't look good, I think, when he said it either. So
no, it didn't. Yeah, for right from the beginning, he was getting dunked on Twitter. So not that coaches really should care about Twitter, but you know, the general fan base of the NHL was not looking at that quote kindly. This game, I feel like outside of the actual game, like the gameplay itself, also had so many amazing moments. Like I tweeted during the game that I didn't think that this series would immediately surpass our expectations, and it did. You know, like our expectations were already so high, and no offense to, you know, the Battle of Florida, which was a snooze fest, honestly, for the first game outside of that one Kucherov play for Corey Perry's goal, and man, especially Rangers Canes, which was a grinded out awful game to watch. This one was just, if you stayed up to watch it at the beginning, I don't know how you could have fallen asleep, because it was wall-to-wall entertainment. There was, did you see Matthew Tkachuk asking Evander Kane if he needed some money?
Yes We go from what Brad Marchand and the Tony D'Angelo stuff.
The your racist stuff.
What a playoffs for chirps. It feels amazing, like everybody's chirps. Just been elevated this playoffs. It's been and so fun.
Somebody posted a video from the penalty box where it looks like Brady Tkachuk is telling Kane, "You poor bastard."
Oh God.
It's just, there's that, and then Matthew Tkachuk scores a goal when Evander Kane is in the box still, when they took coincidental minors, but there was another Calgary minor on there. So Oilers fans are freaking out. How come Brady Tkachuk's allowed out of the box? Well, it turns out, according to the rule, when a team has two players take penalties at the same time, that team can choose which player comes out of the box first to rejoin play. And they chose Tkachuk, which was a stroke of brilliance, because he essentially scored the insurance marker, put that game away, right? And then he scores the hat trick. And it pans up to his dad, Keith, in the stands, who has his hat, but he's holding it. Everybody else is throwing hats. And he's like, "No, I'm not throwing my hat," for his own son's hat trick. And people are giving him the gears. And he's like, "It's my favorite hat. I'm not throwing my hat."
Then, I mean, of course, there's the whole thing about Brady Tkachuk, you know, captain of the Senators, going absolutely ballistic for his brother, Matthew. Like, I know that there's been some talk on the older section of hockey Twitter of like, why is this a thing? No, it's great. We love a good, you know, sibling supporting sibling thing. Like, you know, Brady Tkachuk is the number one Calgary Flames fan right now, and we love to see it. I do. I think he's been, you know, it's been a really, there's a lot of really good energy around this Flames team in general, just, you know, from all that stuff. Like, this has been such an entertaining series already, and like, I hope it continues. I really do, because like, I want the series to go seven, because it'd be great if we had seven full games of what we just witnessed in game one. I don't think that's going to be the case, just because, I don't know, it feels like a lot to wish for something like that our day and age. But
yeah, I think the next game is going to be a lot more physical.
You saw the end of the game. They were, you know, it was when it really got physical and stuff, like the frustrations and whatnot and the rivalry boiling over. But like I said, this really has that feel of that Flyers Penguins series from 2012 between the rivalry itself and the way game one went. I mean, I don't know if the chaos will continue in the same way that series did, because that series was just complete chaos from start to finish. And I don't think we've seen another series really like that in some time, but it'd be great if this could kind of follow up on that, because, you know, we need a little bit of chaos. It's the Stanley Cup playoffs. And as just a viewer with no real rooting interest here, I mean, I predicted the Flames, but like, you know, I'm not going to be too mad if Connor McDavid, you know, continues to move forward in the playoffs. And he had 4 points in this game, and you know, him and Draisaitl did their very best to try and get this team to, you know, like, you know, drag this team to victory, but it was just too much for them. But you know, as an impartial viewer, this has just been everything you would have wanted from a hockey game and more, I think. And it's a bit of a shame that it is the like 9:30 series, like the 9:30 like game time, because it's, you know, a little bit later on in the evening. But it seemed like a lot of people stayed up for it. It'll be interesting to see what the ratings are like. But like, this has just been an incredible series, and I really hope it continues, because it's just been some of the best, like, just pure entertainment we've seen in these playoffs. Like, there's been a lot of drama between, you know, the Maple Leaf stuff. We're getting the Battle of Florida, and we're going to talk about that in our next segment. But like, I don't think anything has really been able to compare to this, and it's only just been one game. I hope it doesn't disappoint. I think you're right. It'll probably be more physical in, you know, game two and beyond. But circling back to what we started, it's going to hinge a lot on the goaltenders, and Mike Smith especially. Who knows, who is going to start in game two? I mean, do you go back to Mike Smith if you're the Oilers? Do you go to Koskinen?
They have a choice.
Really? Like, after like, I don't know, maybe. Okay, explain that, Andrew. Why do you think that they don't have a choice? Because, you know, you said it yourself, like, just a handful of minutes ago, that Koskinen didn't play too bad.
Yeah, like, but he like, still played bad.
Yeah, but, like, compared to Mike Smith, who let in 3 goals on 10 shots in the first 6 minutes and was pulled at that point. Like, do you think that he gets one more game to show that he can do it? Do you think he's earned that after that first round the Oilers put up and, you know, what he did in the first round? Or do they press the panic button, basically? Because, like, if you're the Oilers, you can't, like, you can only go so far with this. Like, it something has to give here. And if Mike Smith can't put it together, but what would you do, Andrew?
Well, Mike Smith is so hot and cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he can't be trusted.
Yes.
But Mikko Koskinen is just almost always bad. That's the thing. Like, I just don't think he's an NHL goaltender. You look at his work in the playoffs so far, he's been terrible. Just mm-hmm. terrible. And yeah, he wasn't the reason they lost last game, but he did let in 5 goals on 37 shots. Like, it's not good. Right, he's not going to save you a game against the Calgary Flames, especially if Markstrom is better. Mm-hmm. So they kind of have to try Mike Smith. And if Smith falters again, well, maybe it's time to call up Stuart Skinner. Like, yeah. That's the only other option that they have. Mike Smith was so good in that first round that I assume they're just going to keep on going to him.
Yeah,
and hope that he gets hot. But yeah, I just don't think Mike Smith is Jake Oettinger. Oettinger put out one of the greatest goaltending performances of all time, in my opinion, in the first round. And I think you see what he was holding back in that first game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it circles really back to what we've talked about with the Oilers all season, the lack of a, you know, good goaltender that isn't hot and cold in the way Mike Smith is. Sure. Mike Smith was a big reason why the Oilers ended the season in the way that they did. I think he went like 9-0 or something like that to end the season. And sure, that's great. But the playoffs are when it matters. And if, you know, Mike Smith and the tenuous situation of the Oilers goaltending is the reason why the Oilers eventually bow out of these playoffs, I don't know. I mean, you gotta look at management there and, you know, wonder what they were doing at the trade deadline when they decided not to, you know, pick a flyer on a random goaltender if they possibly could. I know the market was probably pretty slim, but, you know, it all circles back to things we've talked about before, Andrew, but, you know, I think we're going to leave it here with the Oilers and Flames. Game two is going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. This is just a really great series, and I hope it delivers, because playoff hockey is good, and rivalries in the playoffs are even better, and I know the NHL's playoff format sucks, but we got this matchup because of the way the NHL's playoff format is, so I'll give it a pass for this one.
Once in a while, it delivers a great thing.
Yes, once in a while it delivers something great, because this has been incredible so far. But coming up next, we're going to talk about the Eastern Conference, and honestly, probably even the Avalanche too, kind of like a catch-all grab bag of the remainder of the series. Specifically, I want to talk about the Panthers and the way they started their series against Tampa Bay, among other things. But that'll be coming up right after this. I love brownies, but do you know what I love more? Brownie batter. Sometimes I eat half the batter just while I'm making the brownies. Imagine if you could lick that brownie spatula clean and get some protein in. You're in luck, because Built has a new creation, and this one is better than ever. The Brownie Batter Puff. You heard me right. This puff takes protein bars to a whole new level, and they're available right now on Built.com. Have you tried the puffs yet? I'm not sure what you're waiting for. Puffs are a chocolate-covered marshmallow protein bar. That's right. Deliciously flavored marshmallow covered in 100% real chocolate. With 140 calories, 17 grams of protein, and only 7 grams of sugar, Brownie Batter Puffs are the perfect pick-me-up for any day. All Built Puffs are covered in 100% real chocolate. That means that with Built, you can eat healthy and actually enjoy doing it. And they're made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. The brownie batter puffs will have you completely forgetting that you're eating a protein bar. No need to pinch yourself. This is real life. Go to Built.com to get brownie batter puffs now. Go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off of your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Thank you for making the CrossCheck NHL show your first listen. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast, nightly recaps of every NHL game with analysis from our local experts. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Andrew. So like I teased before we went to break, we're going to talk about the rest of the playoff field because nothing was nearly as interesting as that other game, but there are still some things to talk about. Specifically, the Florida Panthers, and are they broken, Andrew? Because I'm worried for this team. Obviously, we are recording this before we know the score of game two. So this point could very well be moot, and the Panthers may have woken up by then, but it is not looking good for them. They lost 4-1 in game one. Looked incredibly listless, still continuing to play poorly from, you know, their first, not poorly from their first round series, because they did turn it on eventually, but they just don't look like the team that they ended the regular season, the President's Trophy winners. And their power play, still bad, still hasn't gotten a goal, went 0-3 in game one. So, Andrew, are these Panthers broken? What
they
do
they sure look at?
Yeah, what
they
do
sure
they
look at? Yeah, there's a lot of things that they need to do. I'm honestly not sure where to start with them because this is not the team that we saw in the regular season. I saw Craig Button on TSN talked about how like the Lightning have raised their game and the Florida Panthers haven't, and I think that's very astute. It seems like they haven't hit playoff mode yet. And yeah, they won the series against Washington, but frankly, based on the disparity between those two teams, that should have been a sweep. Like, the Florida Panthers should have mopped the floor with the Washington Capitals, and it seemed like the entire time they were busy treading water. Like, yeah, they outplayed them, sure, but they outplayed them from behind. Like, the Capitals scored first almost every game in that series. They got leads. Yeah, they blew them because they're not nearly as good as Florida, but Florida never seemed in control, even though they won it in six games. They can't play like that against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, they need to break that goose egg on the power play, and they need to break it now, mm-hmm. right? Obviously, people will be listening to this show a day after game two. I would hope that when you're listening to this, they do have a power play goal, because if they don't, they're down 0-2 at home, which is what happened last year between these two teams. And then the Panthers won 1 in Tampa Bay, I think, and push the series to 6, if I'm correct.
I don't remember, but that sounds about right, given what happened.
Yeah, but I believe after the first four games, they were down 3-1 to the Lightning. Mm-hmm. And last year, I thought they played the Lightning better.
Yeah.
And I look at the Lightning and like, yeah, they're playing all right, but they still don't look good to me. They look tired. They don't look like they have the magic that they had last year. At a certain point, you got to be able to beat them. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, they have that championship pedigree and they never stop and they're good at shutting things down. Sure. But the Panthers are not a bad team and they need to be playing a heck of a lot better than they currently are.
Yeah. And it starts with that power play, because you're right. If they go 0-3, 0-4 again in game two, it feels like it's almost over. Like,
yeah,
it would be ridiculous if they don't score a power play goal at all in these playoffs and then get booted. I don't remember their power play numbers throughout the season, but considering their offense is
fifth
so
best.
Good. Fifth best. Yeah. And for that to dry up would be just a huge failure on their part. And I just don't know what it is. I mean, we know that their major weakness coming in was their goaltending, and you know, Sergei Bobrovsky had some weak goals and stuff in game one, but it is going to be probably, if you know, the Panthers lose this series, it'll be at the feet of the fact that their power play couldn't get it going when they needed it to. And sure, Tampa Bay is on paper probably weaker than they were in their previous two Stanley Cup runs. And I mean, like, that's pretty much a fact. They lost their entire grinding line. And added Brandon Hagel, who I think has been a fine acquisition, but I don't think he's on the, you know, same par as, like, you know, your Blake Coleman's and whatnot. So
no, he's just younger, right? He doesn't have the veteran savvy that
he could very well
had.
blossom into a player like that. But it it's not the same. And yet the Lightning still look, you know, good enough to beat, you know, a listless Panthers team. They were able to, you know, eke out a win against the Maple Leafs, even though the series was more in Toronto's favor at the end of the day. But I know you keep saying that the Tampa Bay Magic isn't there, but you know, it's still like they still have, you know, the drive to compete, the will to keep winning and stuff like that. I don't know. They're look as good, it's just there's at least a little bit of magic around them in terms of like, how can they continue to keep doing this? How can they keep getting away with this type of thing?
Yes, it is. How can they keep getting away with this? Like, I think that's the biggest takeaway from the last couple of games is I know that Leafs fans don't want to think of the series as anything other than like, oh, you know, the better team won and the Leafs fought hard. But frankly, the last three games, I think the Lightning's opponents have beat themselves more than the Lightning have done it, especially the last two, because man, if you can't take advantage of the Tampa Bay Lightning without Braden Point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, come on, because it's not going to get any easier when he comes back. Like, it's not going to get any easier. I will say that at the very least, some of the big players for Florida are showing up now. You know, Claude Giroux is looking much, much better than he did in the early first round. Alex Barkov looks fantastic. Mackenzie Weegar, again, is posting phenomenal underlying numbers like usual. Who was exposed in that first game was a guy that got exposed last year in the Stanley Cup final as well, Ben Chiarot. Lightning do very well with guys like Ben Chiarot, who Chiarot's not a bad skater, but he's bad at anticipating lateral plays. And that's where the Tampa Bay Lightning excel and where a guy like Ben Chiarot struggles. And, you know, if the power play is going to continue to be a situation where on all special teams in seven games now, the Panthers have been outscored 9-0. Like, you can't win like that against a team like Tampa Bay. Yeah, you could beat Washington, but you're not going to beat Tampa Bay like that. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, it's not looking good for the Panthers. But like I said, by the time you guys hear this, the script may be flipped. Things can change. It was still only game one by the time we're recording this. So like things can change, but you know, they can't keep going the way that they are. Their power play needs to get it going. Bobrovsky needs to tighten up a little bit more, you know, all that stuff.
And for the other two series, Mary, let's put them together, 'cause I feel like it's almost the exact same situation.
Yeah.
You can tell me if you disagree, but I look at both the Rangers and the Blues, the fact that they put those games to overtime in game one and still lost, that's terrible for them. I've seen a few people talk about how, like, oh yeah, you know, the Blues, look how hard they played the Avalanche. They could really make a series of this. And I look at it as they got extraordinarily lucky and they still lost. The Avalanche destroyed them. I think Carolina didn't show up in game one and they still found a way to win. I think those series are going to be maybe even shorter than I thought. I'm very worried about the Rangers and the Blues' ability to compete in those series. The fact that they lost those first games, which both of them had a legitimate chance of sneaking one out.
Yeah, they could have been real tone setters. They could have, you know, really put
the shock, you know?
Yeah,
the shock in the favorite.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like it's still, you know, only one game, but yeah, you put your opponent on the back foot, you have a bigger opportunity to, you know, keep them unbalanced and keep them unsettled. And, you know, obviously both teams, both, you know, Carolina and Colorado were playing at home. To, you know, steal one at home against your opponent like that is a huge missed opportunity. I mean, the Avalanche still look completely dominant. Even though that game went into overtime and they only won by one goal, they, you know, outshot the Blues. It was 54 shots to 25 for, you know, the Avalanche. Even though St. Louis scored first, you know, Colorado was able to, you know, they just looked completely dominant in that game. And Jordan Binnington's really been saving them. But you're right that these series both have a similar vibe, even though by the metrics, Colorado is dominating the Blues more than Carolina was with, you know, the Rangers. But, you know, they both had their goalies, you know, standing on their heads and they just couldn't get it done when they needed to. But, yeah, I mean, the Carolina series might honestly probably go longer, but I don't think anything is really stopping this Avalanche team unless, you know, catastrophe happens, because, you know, it is about this time last year when the Blues completely, not Blues, the, geez, I keep messing up the Blues and the Avalanche, but it was around this time last year when the Avalanche kind of fell apart against Vegas. I don't see that happening here for this Colorado team. They just feel so different. And
well, and St. Louis is no Vegas, no offense to their fans, but they're just not.
And I mean, Jordan Binnington can steal games. He's been really, really good. For some reason, he's just able to turn it on in the playoffs. Like, he had a so-so to bad regular season, but in the playoffs, he's just been incredible for the Blues. But, like, I don't think it's going to be enough for this team. They're just really, really awesome. But, it was about this time last year when things fell apart for Colorado. But they're too talented. They're too deep of a team. Like I said, unless something catastrophic happens, you know, I think, you know, Colorado is, you know, one step closer to winning this series, but we'll see. And, you know, the Rangers Carolina game, yeah, it you're right in that Carolina definitely didn't show their best stuff, but they were still able to win. And I think that, you know, showcases, you know, their structure as a team. They're still able to get offensive production when needed. But yeah, I mean, if you're the Rangers, it's definitely demoralizing to come away from that series when you held them so close. And, you know, it went to overtime and stuff like that, and you still weren't able to get it done. But obviously, it's still early goings for the playoffs. But, you know, nothing, I think, can hold a candle, at least right now, to the Battle of Alberta. But there's, you know, still some really interesting storylines in these playoffs as they're going along. But coming up next, we are going to shift from the playoffs to a team decidedly not in the playoffs. We're going to talk about the Arizona Coyotes and their arena situation, because there was a little bit more news in terms of, you know, how it's going to work with them being at Arizona State. And it looks bad for the NHL in terms of just like public perception. But we're going to talk about that coming up right after this. Our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments this year, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even the next season's NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Andrew, so I wanted to end off our hockey talk with the Arizona Coyotes. I feel bad talking about the Coyotes all the time because I don't want to pummel their fans. Their fans are probably the strongest fans in the NHL, because if you're still around with this team, you probably have more resilience than anybody, maybe outside of the Maple Leafs fans, if I'm being
honest. Yeah, it's not about the fans.
Yeah, it's not about the fans. This isn't about you. It is about, you know, the management putting this team in the position it is in. As we all know, the Coyotes will be playing at Arizona State starting next season and for possibly the foreseeable future. There's no end date. They're supposed to eventually have some sort of arena elsewhere. Tempe, is that?
Tempe.
Okay. But I don't think that's been finalized yet.
No, there's nothing going, like, the city council hasn't even approved it.
Yeah. So they are going to be playing in a college arena for the foreseeable future. Who knows if that arena deal with Tempe will materialize, because we don't know. We have no idea. But, you know, they have to do modifications on this college arena to, you know, make it fit, you know, NHL locker room standards, taking out some seats, probably about like, what did they say, 3,000 to 4,000 or something like that, fans in attendance for games. But the big news that happened recently is there was a report from The Athletic that talked about how the Coyotes will have to be basically on their best behavior with their deal with Arizona State, essentially saying that they have to abide by basically a good behavior clause, that they'll have to basically avoid notoriety. Or the team could be forced to look somewhere else to play. And this is a report from Katie Strang and Sean Shapiro from The Athletic. So obviously all props to them for doing all of the reporting. I'm just, you know, talking about some of basically the bullet points. So, you know, obviously we've known about the Coyotes and their incompetence, I guess, to put it best. And like I said, notoriety at worst in terms of, you know, things that they've done, obviously not paying their taxes to the city of Glendale, among other things. So that is one thing, that good behavior clause was already shocking to begin with. Then, of course, there was the possible rumor slash report that the Coyotes wouldn't be allowed to have their logo at Center Ice in the ASU arena. That has since been proven false. There has been a report from Arizona State that both of the teams will share their logos at Center Ice, but the Coyotes can't hide it in any way, can't try and, you know, obfuscate it in any way, or, you know, try and cover up any of the ASU branding. They can control, like, I think the scoreboard and the ribbon boards around the arena, but they have to get approval of any, like, alcohol or liquor advertisements. They can only basically partner with anybody that ASU says they can. This looks really bad for the NHL. Yeah. It's looked really bad just in general, but this report basically is, like, I get it. The Coyotes weren't coming into this from a position of strength, but it looks really bad, Andrew. It's so bad.
Yeah, it is. Even if we toss aside the idea that the Coyotes have no revenue from on-ice advertising, the fact that, like, this whole morality clause is something that's very common in business whenever there's, like, a partnership like this. But if they're going to overrule alcohol and, you know, I guess, like, what else? Gambling?
Gambling stuff.
Like, that's, like, a lot of the NHL's ad revenue, frankly. So that puts the Coyotes in a situation where they can't make any money. And, like, frankly, I don't even want to make this a conversation about the Coyotes anymore, because I'm done with that organization. I think everyone involved in that organization needs to be out of the NHL. I think that team needs to be relocated. I feel sorry for the fans. I really do. But they are a problem, and they have been a problem for a long time. It's been like 15 years that they've been losing upwards of $30 million every year. And we talk about revenue sharing in the NHL. There's not nearly enough revenue sharing in the NHL. So that's not really the big deal that's, like, the Coyotes are hurting the league. Where they're hurting the league is in keeping the salary cap down. Mm-hmm. When you have a team that's just a constant suck on resources all the time, and now you're going to go into an arena where you can't even sell tickets to the point where you can put on a profitable game, like, players are going to get hit with higher escrow because of this. And escrow is already high because of the pandemic. This makes it harder to get to a point where the players have paid their share back after the league didn't get the split revenues the last couple of years there at 50-50 because of the pandemic, not being able to sell tickets, all that. If I was a player right now, if I'm the NHLPA, I'm looking at finding a way to open the CBA at the next possible juncture to give them some sort of out clause as a PA, as a players association, as a union, to kibosh situations like the Coyotes and force the NHL to move a franchise, because that franchise is costing players money and has been costing players money for what, 30 years? Mm-hmm. Almost 30 years since they moved to Arizona. That's stupid. Like, yeah. I understand Arizona is a big market, but the NHL has failed consistently to grow that market, to get stability in that market. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Like, we need to cut bait. This whole sunk cost fallacy that the NHL is operating with, it's just losing more money. Mm-hmm. Move them somewhere that will have some stability, that has some actual financial backing, that isn't a bunch of, like, you know, behind the scenes bankrolling, sketchy dealings. Like, I'm just done with it. I don't want this story to keep going anymore.
Yeah, and it feels like every time we hear it, it just gets worse. I mean, like, we all know it's bad. Like, you know, no NHL team should have to play in a college arena for the foreseeable future because their management didn't pay their rent bills on time. It's just very embarrassing. That's the thing I keep coming back to. Like, no other league but the NHL tolerates this. And it's so hard to see why, considering it's costing them money. Do they think that their image will get worse if they just, you know, move the Coyotes? Like, it may look bad in the short term, but in the longer term, it'll probably be better because, you know, you get that franchise away from any of the, you know, management upper people there, and, you know, move it somewhere else and give it to, you know, a ownership group that is possibly trustworthy. And honestly, at least anybody I think could probably own that team and do a better job at this point. The fans could probably own that team and do a better job with it at this point. It's just, it's so frustrating that the NHL keeps holding on to the Coyotes and basically just for pride at this point, it feels like. Like they don't want to, you know, admit that they were wrong. It is just, it's a shame that it continues to come to this. And when we always talk about the Coyotes, it just, it sucks because the fans don't deserve it. They've been, you know, dogpiled by management and, you know, other NHL fans, but they don't deserve the ridicule here. They deserve the sympathy because, like I said, if you're a fan of the Coyotes, you're probably the strongest fan base on this earth outside of the Maple Leafs because they deal with different types of sports suffering. But, you know, you're a fan of that team, and what do you get? You get to watch 82 games a season.
Yep.
You get a cool jersey. Like, if you buy the jersey, you get, like, some pretty cool, like, you know, merchandise probably. Like, the Coyotes branding, at least, in terms of just, like, their, you know, visual look. I really like it, but
I hate it.
Fair enough. It obviously is to everybody's taste, but you know, I've always been a big fan of the Kachina jersey. But regardless, you don't get a lot probably if you're a Coyotes fan, other than you probably get tickets for dirt cheap and you get to, you know, watch some hockey for pretty cheap. So I don't know. It is just, it's a shame. I am looking forward to seeing what it is going to be like in the college arena for them. Just because it'll be so different from anything else. Sure, it'll probably be embarrassing, but it could end up being, if, you know, things break right, it could end up being a spectacle in a good way. Obviously, it shouldn't be how it is for an NHL team in the long term, but, you know, maybe at least like for a couple of weeks, it is, you know, something interesting at least. But it's just a shame that we got here, and I don't know. It's going to be so hard. Like, I don't even know when you would be, like, if this was me, you'd cut this like yesterday, but like, I don't know, if you're the NHL, like, it's hard to see them giving this up because like they're in it. The, like, the worst it can get is now. Like, I don't think it could really realistically get any worse, if I'm being honest. So
it could get worse if Tempe denies them.
All right, fine. That's a good point.
I think that would be the boiling point, right? If that actually happens, then they would probably be moved. And it would be, you know, Houston or Austin to keep in that general division area. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't, some people are dreaming about Quebec City. It's not happening.
Yeah.
The only way that Quebec City is happening is through, like, another expansion years from now, or if Florida pulls up stakes because they can't make money there after, you know, if this playoff run still doesn't draw crowds. I will say there was a couple of people who posted the, like, the crowd noise in Florida when it was, like, tied 1-1. Mm-hmm. And how quiet it was. And I was like, yeah, they need to work on that a little bit. It was like, you could hear a pin drop in that arena. They needed to, but that's partially on like the team itself. Get people pumped up, right? Give them an atmosphere to be going along with. It's not enough. So, all these, the Southern teams that are really struggling, it's not about the fans. You know, like, if your fans don't know much about hockey, that's your fault. As an organization, they've been there long enough. You know, if they don't know where the team is, that's your fault. That's the management's fault, ownership's fault. And I think people get so upset as fans that people are dogging on them. It's really not about the fans. It's not. Yeah,
it really isn't. But we're going to end that segment there because I don't know. Talking about the Coyotes always leaves me in a bad mood, Andrew. It really does. It's just, it's. It's fun to point and laugh at the management, but overall the situation is pretty sad just in general in terms of, you know, how it looks for the NHL, how it reflects on the fans. You know, it shouldn't, but, you know, it unfortunately does in this world that isn't, you know, fair of ours. So, yeah, it just reflects poorly on basically everybody involved, even though it is fun to laugh at the management. But we're going to, like I said, end it there, and we're going to finish up this episode with a pop culture talk, and it'll be coming up right after this. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders parts on their computer, choosing only the brands their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business, serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, Andrew, so we're going to end off this week's episode with our pop culture segment that we do every week. I'm bringing to the table the She-Hulk trailer, the newest Marvel show that I believe is coming out in August. And I wanted to bring it up because I love my girl Tatiana Maslany, famous Orphan Black fame. I will probably watch the show for her. I know a lot of the talk has been on the CGI of She-Hulk, so I wanted to get your opinion on that. But like I said, love my girl Tatiana Maslany. Absolutely watch Orphan Black if you haven't. I think, you know, we can both, you know, endorse this statement because it was an incredible show. She, an absolute acting masterclass in that show that she did. But there's been some talk online about the CGI. Have you seen the trailer? What do you think? Give me your thoughts.
I did. I think it looks super fun. I follow a creator on TikTok named Jay Stubbs, and she was talking about how, like, she was very happy about it because She-Hulk is one of her favorite characters, and this show is like very clearly made for like a female audience, which is something that frankly comic book movies don't get to very often. So that's really fun. I think that they haven't shied away from She-Hulk character in the comics. It seems very accurate. The fact that she's like goofy and outgoing and funny and aggressive in every way. So that's really fun. I think Tatiana Maslany is going to kill it. I like that it looks like Mark Ruffalo is going to be in it for the whole series. That's cool. Really fun. The CG, people are freaking out about it. I don't think it's finished. Right? It's coming out in what, August?
August, yes. So, I mean, there's a little bit more time for them to.
Yeah, there's time. And I saw there was a really interesting thing going on because people were kind of dragging the CG in Doctor Strange as well, which frankly, I don't really understand because there's so many special effects shots in that movie. And I would say like 98% of them are spectacular. And maybe there's a couple moments where if you freeze frame, like, oh yeah, it doesn't look good. But like, if you're going to put that much attention to it on a movie like that, that has that kind of like amount of CG in it. Yeah. You're going to find mistakes, but enjoy movies. It wasn't to me. In terms of Marvel, the times where the CG has really let them down was like the final fight in Black Panther, right? And that was very much like clearly they ran out of time and that's all they could get done in the time frame. And that sucks. Like they should have just delayed the movie and had more time. But that's just somehow like that's not the way it works really in making a movie. But I saw a video by a woman who's in the special effects industry and she was talking about like how people don't understand that the entire special effects industry has been under a lot of duress under the over the last few years because of Avatar.
Oh, and yeah.
Weta Digital, right? Got credit for creating, I forget what it's like Gigantus or something like that. The octopus thing in Doctor Strange, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're the ones who did the dragons and the ending monster in Shang-Chi as well. And they're saying like, yeah, anytime you're doing a big CGI character or a big CGI creature, Weta Digital is going to be the gold standard, right? Ever since Lord of the Rings, they've been the ones. But because of Avatar, all of the team leads, all of the most experienced animators, all of that, all of those people have been working on Avatar for James Cameron for like the last 5 years.
That's right, so, because he's doing like multiple movies. It's like he's like basically Lord of the Rings-ing it and is like making all the movies back to back.
Yes.
And that's why you didn't hear
their entire thing. Like the only purpose for the Avatar movies is CGI.
Yeah.
It ain't the story.
No. You know?
So they're putting unbelievable amounts of effort and money into it. So they get everybody's best. Right. Every company that does CGI, their best people are working on Avatar right now, which means things like Star Wars, things like Marvel, their CGI will have times where they don't have the best people on it and think corners will get cut or they just don't have the time to do it, or like the allotted time that they gave, the most experienced people could do that. But the people one rung down the ladder can't get that done. They don't have the best team leads, and it kind of sucks. And there'll be moments where the CG falls behind. But I don't know, if you're so caught up in CG that you can't enjoy a story or like character development and all that, I think you're looking at movies the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Like if you watched Book of Boba Fett and you got super hung up on the Luke Skywalker, no spoilers, I guess, but we already spoiled it on this podcast before.
It's also been, I think you spoiled it. So.
But like when Luke Skywalker appears in Book of Boba Fett, if you're super stuck on what his face looks like and like the movements of his lips, blah, 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 and you're like, oh, it doesn't look 100% real. Yeah, guys, Mark Hamill's 70. It's not real. Just try to enjoy it. And that's my rant about the CG. And if it doesn't get any better with She-Hulk, I'll be a little bit disappointed, because I think they'd be doing her a little bit of an injustice. Because Hulk looks so good, but Hulk's model is already made.
Yeah.
Right. So they can just plug and play. I hope it looks a little bit better for She-Hulk, and the texturing and the comping is a little bit better, but I'm not worried about it, because even if it is as is, you have to remember it's a TV show. And yes, these Disney Plus shows have a higher budget, but the production of a TV show is very different than a movie.
Yeah.
Right? So like the production time is just way different. And I saw some people saying like, oh yeah, it's CW level. It is not.
It isn't.
It is not. Not even close.
I was thinking about the CW shows as you were talking about that. But yeah, Tatiana Maslany deserves all the best. So like, I hope the series, you know, the CG basically rises to meet her. She's going to give it her all in terms of acting. And, you know, I'm going to watch because I love her. She's a great actress. That was really interesting. It always circles back to Avatar. However many years that movie was out of public consciousness, basically, it's now like it's back in public consciousness because, you know, there's going to be a movie coming out. There's like a video game, too. Like, it's just wild how like Avatar has, you know, come in and out of the public consciousness over the past decade. But I know you at least have something else in the list. I don't know if you wanted to talk about it, but that was at least a really good discussion on CG and stuff. I have nothing else to add, but yeah, I hope they tighten it up a little bit, but I'm still going to watch it because I love my girl Tatiana Maslany. But what else did you have here, Andrew, before we...
Yeah, I have Ozark written down because I'm watching the final season, but I'm not done it yet, so let's save it for next week.
Perfect. That is awesome for me because I wanted to, you know, get in, you know, a little bit of Marvel talk because that was dominating my feed the other day. But
for sure,
that is all we have.
Kenobi next week.
Oh, that's right. How could I have forgotten? I think it's because of the playoffs and I'm going to a wedding, not this weekend, next weekend. So my perception of time is a little bit like I'm looking forward to that wedding and I just completely bypass Kenobi. But yes, we will have that to talk about too. So there's a lot of really awesome stuff coming up. And I think that'll definitely be one I watch. It won't be like Book of Boba Fett where I kind of fell off that one. I think I'll be in it from the get-go. Before I finish my spiel, did you see the like pictures and stuff of Hayden Christensen? There was like, I think, in a Vanity Fair article.
He looks so happy.
He does. I, you know, love that for him. Love that we're getting, you know, the Hayden Christensen redemption arc, basically, that, you know, he deserves and we deserve as a public, because, you know, he's just a dude, and, you know, we've all talked about, you know, what the prequels and stuff, but overall, really looking forward to that too. So thank you for reminding me that. Is that it, Andrew? Can I finish my ending spiel? Awesome.
You can.
That is all we have for you today on the Crosscheck NHL Show. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Make sure to follow us on your podcast platform of choice, from Apple to Odyssey to Spotify and YouTube, and rate and review us while you're at it. You can follow the pod at Crosscheck NHL on Twitter, me at Mary C. Clark on Twitter, and Andrew at Andrew Berkshire on Twitter. Thanks for making the Crosscheck NHL Show your first listen every Tuesday and Friday. We'll be back on Tuesday with some more puck talk, but now make your second listen Locked On NHL. From first-round matchups to each Stanley Cup kiss, Locked On NHL covers the playoffs like no other. Hear the latest news and opinions from local experts every Monday through Friday. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts.